Enchiladas, everyone! It's Tuesday, April 14th. This is The Refinery, where we explore the best ways to make conservative messaging work. Wait, did I say buenas tostadas? Stupid autocorrect. I've been victimized just like Ezra Klein. Sorry, I'm not going to do the whole intro because the whole tostada thing is just too dang funny. It really, really is. I don't know if y'all saw it all, but it's been making most of us giggle all week long. I'll back up for the people in the cheap seats that can't afford a Twitter account. Ezra Klein is a writer for Vox, which is the news explainer site that gets almost everything wrong. So, you know, it's funny from the very beginning. Ezra thinks he's all that, and he really isn't. But anyway, he's tweeting about Marco Rubio, and his little tweet, which was an advertisement for his article. Here's what Marco Rubio tostada on taxes, Medicare, marijuana, same-sex marriage, and more. And absolutely, the conservative Twitter sphere just jumped on it. You know, that's not what you meant to, that's not your real introduction, and really jumping on all sorts of food-related mistakes, because it was, you know, it was clearly a voice to text error, because, you know, he said, you know, here's where Mario Rubio stands, or, you know, what he said, or whatever it was, but it came out tostada. And, you know, it's one of those things. It was a classic example to me of how the way the left approach would be totally different, but our approach, which was immediate and organic, and we didn't have to coordinate and make any kind of effort at it, we all laughed and we all made fun of it, and we're teasing Ezra Klein and we're making fun of Vox and we're making jokes on our own and having a great time with it. But at the same time, we know that our opponents over on the other side would not have made a joke, and they have not made jokes when the same thing happens. You know, if this had been Chris Wallace saying it about Sonia Sotomayor, just imagine, pause for a moment and imagine Chris Wallace tweeting out what Sonia Sotomayor tostada about a particular case. That would be an instant reaction from the left activists who are in the media, as proof positive that the GOP is racist underneath. We're like closet racists. We really are inherently racist. And sometimes it comes out in honesty and we can't hide it anymore. And every single candidate would be forced to respond. How do you respond to Chris Wallace's obvious blatant racism about Sonia Sotomayor? Are you a racist like he is? And we know that that's the case because the left is always looking for an opportunity to attack. They are always looking for anything that they can use as a weapon. They don't allow for... they absolutely would understand that it was not a racism indicator. They would absolutely understand that it was a typo or a voice-to-text autocorrect error. They absolutely know that. They're not stupid. But they would immediately, and without even having to coordinate amongst themselves, they would all at the same time seize upon that as a weapon to use against us, and they would be successful. This is the end of the face.
In fact, Chris Hayes has already called for some serious repercussions with Fox News just because you cited Chris Wallace as an example. You know, they're already
out there, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah.
This is what bothers me about this. I thought that the tweets were hilarious, and props to Rachel Barmer from Conservative View for getting in this tweet. Ezra Klein, truly not your finest tweets. That was just, I fell over. That was great. But what bothers me about this is that Leslie's absolutely right in terms of the mismatch of firepower for the same instance. There's never been any consistency on the left. Everything is a potential weapon in their hands. And it's difficult to know what to do about that. For everyday people who are not engaged in politics, this doesn't even register. Except if the left manages to say that, in your example, Chris Wallace has been completely racist. and it's just one more example of faux news bias or racism or whatever, and then that becomes the story. But most people don't care. This is a very limited audience that cares about this, and it's usually the Twitter activist community
right.
that really go outside of that.
Yeah, as a you know, as a victory for the right, making fun of and having a joke at Ezra Klein's expense, it's a bit of camaraderie and inside baseball, having fun with the Twitter conservative activists, very limited audience. It's a very minor thing. It's a 1 or 2 day giggle, haha, and it affects nothing long term. That's the way we do on these things. But had it been Chris Wallace saying tostada about Sonia Sotomayor, it would have been on CNN. It would have been on MSNBC. It would have been in the AP. It would be articles on KHOU. It would be articles on the Chronicle. We would see it on ABC, NBC, and CBS. They would all report on it. Their first story would be, oh, ha, ha, look at this little joke.
You know, an interesting...
But it's a more serious issue that we need to look into more deeply. And we know it.
You know, interesting, and you mentioned Sonia Sotomayor, who purposefully singled out white men as the ones who are less likely to arrive at a wise decision than Latina women.
Crickets.
I mean, you're talking about somebody who purposefully said something that is dramatically racist, absolutely racist, undeniably racist, fully racist. And she gets a pass and they don't mention it. And you're right, they would jump all over Chris Wallace for making one comment, which, by the way, he was responding to somebody else making a comment about Clarkson's weight. And he was prodded into doing it. But, yeah.
That becomes a national story that everybody hears about. Our stuff, when we do it on their side, it stays very local.
Yeah, but, I mean, this was Kelly Clarkson. She's America's treasure, so it's worse when we talk about people like that. It's very, you know, all of the Democrats, they're national treasures, so it's bad and it's in poor taste when we make fun of them. It is totally open season on our guys because our guys
making
suck.
Fun of somebody's weight is just horrible. Chris Christie is so fat.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, if you listen to the David Letterman show, that's all he does is bust on Chris Christie.
Exactly.
And nobody says anything about it.
Well, and on the day that, Stefan, you reminded us of this, on the day that Hillary rolled out her campaign, one of the press releases had a typo in there that she has fought women and children her entire career, or fought the poor and children. She's actually she meant to say that she had fought for children and the poor, but the word was left out, and a misreading of it would be, oh my God, Hillary has fought children and the poor her whole career. Well, it was really obvious that that was just a typo, and we laughed about it, and it didn't become a story. But had that been a typo on Marco Rubio's website, everyone would know. The janitor at your office would know about it.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
That's how they get their stories into the conventional wisdom, and our stuff doesn't. It's a game that we keep losing, and I don't want to win that game. I want the game to stop being played. And it became much more serious, and we can kind of get past the tostada incident. Although I have a feeling that, as an inside joke, the word tostada is going to be used among our people for a very long time. And by our people, yes, I'm including Hispanics in that, because Hispanic conservatives are our people. Buenos tostada. I might in fact say that at my office tomorrow. But anyway, the really serious example of it that is in fact hardening into a conventional wisdom that is reaching beyond political junkies is the way the media has declared the narrative about Rand Paul is that he hates women and he hates the press and he's very testy. And that is the conventional wisdom. That's the story, that's the abbreviated description of Rand Paul. You know, just like the abbreviated description of, oh God, I've just forgotten everyone else in the world. I was going to have an example, but never mind. The brain freeze.
Ted Cruz,
Wacko Bird, right?
Oh, there
Ted
you
Cruz
go.
Is the Wacko Bird. That's all anybody really knows about Ted Cruz. All anybody knows about Herman Cain is pizza and 999. Oh, yeah, Marco Rubio, drinking water, drinking water. Oh, how heinous. That's horrible. That means he's totally disqualified. You know, they will come up with these narratives that they pretend to take seriously because it works. And because it becomes a shorthand that they can use to describe, and it's a shorthand that they can use to denigrate our candidates.
Not going to lie, I just got water up my nose because I tried to pull the Marco Rubio stunt, and my bad.
That takes skill. I wanted to touch on something before we get too far into the thing that Rand actually punched the media back on, and that was the story about the testiness. And I wrote this out on Facebook and shared it around. But here's the steps of the things that happened. Step one, reporter claimed Rand Paul storms out of an interview. Step two, other outlets pick up that headline and craft the narrative about Paul's temper. Step three, left media and left activists spread the narrative as far as possible. Step four, and this is where conservatives actually get what's going on, conservatives watch the actual footage of the exchange and note that the narrative is completely wrong. Step five, tweets from actual people present add to the debunking of the temper narrative. Step six, conservatives spread the debunking as far as possible. And step seven, conservatives mock the media mercilessly. Now that's the progression of things that happen. And what we do is we stop somewhere around step two in the cycle. Conservatives don't pay attention. We don't get any other people that support that or look into that. We just stop. We read a headline and we say, that's the story. And Leslie warns against this all the time, that you can't just look at the headline. And the point being is not that Rand is or isn't testy with the media. The point was there was proof there that people could see for themselves. And if we don't get in the habit of doing that, we're going to let every one of these guys, whether it's your candidate or the guy that you like the best or not, get picked off by this cycle if we aren't looking to fact check all of those things before spreading them around and maybe defending the guy that's not your number one pick because your guy is going to need it too and you want those people who support the other guy to come behind you and support your guy when he's lied about.
Well, and that's the thing. The left is always looking for a weapon to use against us, and that means that we always have to be defending against everything they do. And we have to first recognize that they are all our opponents. Hillary Clinton is going to have $2.5 billion in election funds, but she's also going to have how many billions of dollars worth of free media, because those people are activists for her campaign as well, and that doesn't go into the math. So we have to do a lot better with a lot less money, and it means that we have to defend all the time, and in the extra time beyond the infinity that we're defending, we have to find some way to go on attack and get our own positions out there. And it means we have to work a lot harder than we have been working. And we have to be consistent, and we can never let up. And it means that we have to be pushing for our positions all the time to everyone. Because everyone you know hears leftist messaging all day long. All your non-political friends are leftists, because that's the message they're hearing. If they're not paying attention to politics, they're getting indoctrinated with leftist politics, because leftist politics are in the sports and the entertainment and the reality TV shows and the entertainment TV shows. Leftist politics is what they are surrounded by all the time, and they don't recognize it as leftist politics. They just recognize that as life. And we have to be the ones to explain to them that they've been surrounded by leftist politics, and we have to counter that. And we have to also be defending against the leftist attacks all the time. And that means we don't have time to be attacking each other. So we need to just stop that crap.
There are two opponents on the left that we have right now declared. And the first is Hillary Clinton, and the second is the media.
Right.
And we should frame it that way. We are not just running against Hillary.
And Hillary is running against all of our candidates. They aren't fighting a primary on their own. When we had a primary against Barack Obama, his first run, Barack and Hillary were fighting it out. And we had at least some of our own quiet time where we could deal with ourselves without being attacked by the left. We have no such window. The entire duration of our primary, the other side is going to be attacking us as well, because they don't have their own contest to be dealing with.
Oh, yeah. A perfect example of that would be the, you remember, out of nowhere, I don't know how many of the debates everybody watched, but on ABC, George Stephanopoulos brought up the birth control question. Out of nowhere. That was a planned, staged question, and that got the ball rolling for their side.
And I think one of the reasons that got the ball rolling for them is because we didn't have a great answer, or we weren't expecting the question, and we didn't respond to it in a particularly good fashion. Meanwhile, the story that we're talking about, one of the several stories surrounding Rand Paul, is the fact that he was going up against the media, and in an interview was asked about abortion carve-outs and abortion, is this okay? Are you going to, what is your stance on abortion, going through all that?
Yeah, he got the Stephanopoulos question, basically, like Stefan was talking about. Stefan and Stephanopoulos, wait, hold on.
No, they're not the same person. Don't worry, we know, we've checked. So this question was posed to him, and Rand Paul flipped it. I would love to throw this over to Andy, because this is his specialty. He specializes in the leftist flip. So, can you sort of do the play-by-play for us, Andy?
Well, basically, they came to him and said, asked him, about his views on abortion rights. And he decided to flip it on them and say, tell you what, because they were looking, he says, everybody's looking at the extremes, the all or nothing. Do you believe all over here, they're looking at rape and incest and so forth. He says, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to ask, what was her name? Debbie Wasserman Schultz. If it's okay to abort a 7-pound unborn child, an unborn baby who's just ready to be born. Or, is that okay? And I want you to get back to me with her answer. And I thought this was very interesting. If you don't mind, I'd like to read. I never do this, but I want to read a quick passage from Scripture. Because what Rand Paul was doing is he was taking a tactic that Jesus used, which is simply to put you on offense. Okay, let me read this really quick. Jesus had been doing a bunch of miracles in the area, okay? And it says here, they arrived in Jerusalem, and while Jesus was walking in the temple courts, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders came to him. By what authority are you doing these things, they asked, and who gave you the authority to do this? Jesus replied, I will ask you one question. Answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I'm doing these. John's baptism, was it from heaven or from men? Tell me. Well, they discussed it amongst themselves and said, if we say from heaven, he'll ask, well, then why didn't you believe it? But if we say from men, we fear the people, for they held John to be a prophet. So they answered Jesus, we don't know. Jesus said, neither will I tell you by what authority I'm doing these things. And so what he did was, he put a question on them and said, you ask this, and then I'll answer that. Now, it's not like Jesus always did that a lot of times, and it's not like we always do. A lot of times you're going to just be direct and tell people, and you'll answer the question. Here's the key. The times when you don't do that is when the question is a trap, is a purposeful trap. That means they're being dishonest. When you call out a dishonest person and put them on defense, they will inevitably respond poorly. All right. When they're asking a good question and you try to divert and dodge and all this, then they're just going to go more on offense. Then they smell blood in the water. You don't do that. Answer the question. But in this case, they were trying to trap Rand Paul. It was a trap, and so what he did was set the trap for them. It was very good. And what happened next was great, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz doesn't answer the question. Instead, she says, about the seven-pound fetus. She said, I would leave that to the doctor and the mother. In other words, she punted, and Rand Paul came back the next day and responded to that and said, in other words, her answer is, yes, you can kill the 7-pound baby. I'll answer that for her, because that is what she's saying. It was brilliant. He killed her. Just killed her.
And the thing is that this isn't just some nobody. This is the person who is in charge of the Democrats. She's the, what is it, Democratic Committee Chairwoman? She's not some schmuck.
Yeah, she's the head of the DNC, just like Reince. She's the Reince Priebus of the Democrats.
And she
did not lose her job after they lost big in November.
No, but she should have lost her job after this, because right now, listen, the Democrats have an abortion problem.
The Democrats are absolute. They are totally on the record, on paper, in favor of late-term abortion up to and including the moment of birth. And restrictions on abortion at all, ever.
And that's what, about maybe a 25% position? Tops 20%? It's terrible. Yeah. I love it. And by the way, Rand did us another favor. See, one thing I always love to ask people when they say, well, you know, apolitical people, maybe left-leaning people, when they immediately go for the media spin on a candidate, I always say, you know, I always personalize it so they can feel it. I don't just say, well, you know, the media is biased. Well, they don't understand the bias. It's done too well. So make it personal so they can understand. And I say, don't you hate it when you have a disagreement with someone at work and they own the rumor mill? They know the people in that rumor mill better than you do, and there's nothing you can say, and you're buried. Well, that's kind of what it's like for Rand Paul. He's got a disagreement. The other side owns the rumor mill. But take a listen to what he said. And what I've noticed is that when I personalize it like that, people buy what the media says on someone less. And as for
that, really is a good way to illustrate it.
Yeah.
At work, and they own the rumor mill. I like it.
Yeah. And or at school, you know.
Yeah.
And as for Rand Paul, he did the Jesus thing. He went on offense, put them on defense. And the reason he could do that is because their question wasn't a good one. It was a trap. That's when you can go on offense and embarrass them. And he did. And now J.D.'s right. They've got a big abortion problem. Because virtually no Republican would outlaw abortions in cases of rape and incest. Virtually none. But here you've got the standard bearer for the Democratic Party standing up for their incredibly extreme position. And worse yet, none of their major people, Hillary, Obama, or any of them, are correcting her.
Right. And what's interesting, just purely from a tactical observation standpoint, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the reason that she didn't lose her job is because she's very good at what she does. Her tweeted reply, granted, she doesn't know that her extreme position on abortion is really out of the mainstream. She doesn't really understand that. But she does understand that they are always to be on attack. The last part of her tweeted response to Rand Paul was her attempt to reframe the issue. She said, "Stop! Please don't shush me." She was attempting to reframe the issue that Rand Paul is mean to women, because they're trying desperately to make that their narrative about Rand Paul. She threw that in there, and that's something that we need to be aware of. The left will always, always use that weapon, even when it isn't real, even when it's not true, and they know it's not true. They've decided what the weapon is, and they're always going to use it, even when it's unrelated. Stop shushing me. And you know that's going to come up some point later. somebody on MSNBC or CNN is going to say, oh my gosh, Rand Paul just shushed another person. He's got a long history about that. See, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz asked him to stop shushing her, and here's where he shushed Samantha Guthrie and all of these other things. This is, they're creating, and you can see the process happening. If you know what you're looking for, you can see these little pieces of how they are always on offense and they're always using that weapon. Now, that did not become the big story. We've been able to, I think, make the story more about their radical position on abortion. And the good news about that is, hopefully, if we can persuade more of our candidates that our position that is in opposition to partial birth abortion is a mainstream one and will allow our candidates to speak about abortion openly, forthrightly, and without apology. Because our guys have been told, oh, you've got to stay away from the social issues. You've got to stay away from the social issues. And that's wrong.
Well, you know, and Leslie, I do both sides of it here in Colorado because we have the advantage of all the ads against Cory Gardner and a couple other of our candidates said if they get in office, they're going to take away abortion rights for rape victims, and they're going to take away contraception. They're going to ban contraception and abortion rights for rape victims. Well, now we get a twofer, because I can look at them and say, it's been several months. When are they going to propose the banning of contraception and taking away abortion for rape victims? Oh, now we're at 5 months. When are they going to propose taking away? Hey, now we're at 7 months. 7 months in, they still, but you said if they got in, they were going to force rape victims to carry the child and take away contraception. Good Lord, we're now in 2016. Is this going to happen? And meanwhile, you guys don't have a single major person who's willing to say partial birth abortion is wrong. So on our side, we don't do any of what you said we do, and on their side, they are fulfilling everything we said. Go ahead, Fishy.
Well, my question is, you know, that you guys should probably have on your website a counter that says so many days since Republicans took over and abortion is still legal for, you know,
that's exactly what. Yeah, we tried to do that. We haven't been able to figure out how to do it with Weebly. I wanted to do that back literally the day after we won the election in November for the Senate seat. I wanted to set that up, but there's no way to do it on our website.
Well, that we know of.
Because boy, that is what I want. I want an ongoing ticker. And by the way, even for Republicans who would ban abortions in cases of rape and incest, which is a very small percentage, but even for them, I'd say still use the argument, because you don't understand. All that matters is they lied.
Right.
I don't care what your position is. What matters? Oh, go ahead.
No, maybe you could do it on your Facebook with an image every day.
Well, I will be doing something. I don't know what, but isn't this beautiful? So on the one hand, we win that way. On the other hand, thanks to DWS, to Debbie Wasserman Shush, thanks to her, we get to win on that side too. I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I mean, the war on women should be the greatest thing that's ever happened to us in 2016. This should be fantastic, because all across the country, thanks to the 2014 route, you've got Republicans who the Democrats, it's not just Colorado, you got Republicans all across the country who the Democrats promised would do these war on women things, and they're not proposing any of them. You lied, but you promised. You said, this is like global warming. You said we were going to melt down.
But okay. Wait, Corey and Fishy and I have all been barefoot and chained to the kitchen since November 5th, haven't we?
Corey likes that. Look, I'm against it. I'm uncomfortable with it.
Now you know why I travel for work so much.
So you're not traveling for work, you're escaping briefly, and then he recaptures you, I guess. We're so subjugated.
You know, she used to hide her dating that she does on the side. Now, pretty open, just wants to punish me. Sends me photos.
That might be TMI. I'm not really sure, though.
Yeah.
What was our next subject? Maybe
we should. Well, anyway, I think it's wonderful. I think we've got them dead to rights. And if we don't take advantage of it, do like Rand Paul. By the way, one last thing. The best thing I like about what Rand Paul did, he recovered. Because he didn't handle the initial interview well. He was dodging. The questions were, they're badly put. It was an interrogation, not a question. The lady was, making a speech, not asking a question. But her points were legit. She was saying, and I think he had good answers. He just wasn't ready with them, and he used them later. But the beautiful thing is the way he recovered at a later time. He recovered, so often we don't.
Yeah, I think, one of the best things that could be done to really throw the ball back in their court to expose them was, like you said, is to flip it back on them, but also say, okay, I know when I get to office, I can't change everything. You say that partial birth abortion in women who get pregnant for rape, they should be able to have abortion. Let's just say we compromise. Those women with partial birth abortions and the women with that's been raped, they can have their abortions, but all the other ones, they can't. Do you know you'd save about 900,000 babies a year? It's not the perfect solution to ban it outright, but it's a big step. You could say, okay, we can agree with you there. How about let's do this?
It's certainly offering a solution that's not really been put on the table. But the thing that I think that is the big takeaway from this is that it's given a game plan. It's given a game plan to our side that we have in the past failed to have a real strategy on these issues. We have a game plan now. It's there. It's done. And, we have that in the toolbox going forward. Maybe we can learn from this and apply it to other issues. Hopefully we can. But it is something that we have there and something that, going forward, hopefully more of our candidates can use this in situations where they are in these trap questions.
And we can support them when they do. I think we are seeing that our candidates are getting better, even not just we're getting better candidates, but the candidates themselves are getting better over a period of time at this, and we're getting better at backing their play.
Oh, God, I can't believe it. It's February, and all of our candidates suck. Everything is bad. It's terrible. I'm panicked. We had this thing in the Senate and the House and bad bills getting passed. I'm really freaked out. 2016, it's over. Okay. It's not so bad.
I just misheard you, and you said bad bills getting passed, and I heard Bob Dole. Yeah.
I was talking in the third person.
Because you were talking about Republican trauma and how bad things were happening, and so my ears were prepared to hear the words Bob Dole. I'm sorry, Bob. Love you, man.
You know what's really bad that's happening? You know what's really, really bad that's happening?
Wait. Bob Dole does not approve of being brought into this discussion. Bob Dole is not upset at having been dragged back into the president. Bob Dole was not going to stand for it.
Name drop, wasn't it?
Oh, my. As I was saying, what's really bad, and I can't believe that you would bring some jokes into this, Fishy. This is a serious issue that we're about to talk about, and it's disturbing, and I don't know what we can do. This is a national crisis. American tourists are going to go to Cuba and wreck up the joint.
This made me lose my head. CNN International tweeted today with a link and a picture of a quaint 1950s-style car, "See Cuba before American investors ruin it." How paternalistic and how nasty. And here's the way the article launches.
Cuba Zoo before the animals are all freed.
Yes, this is the kind of thing they said when people would go on quaint little safaris and see the natives in Africa. They're doing the same thing to Cuba. Here we go. Never mind all of the communism, never mind all of the backwardness, never mind the repressive regime. To some outsiders, it looks firmly stuck in the 1950s. Vintage cars roam the streets. The landscape is absent strip malls and global chains. And the buildings, though crumbling, hark back to a grander time. It is these throwbacks that lend Havana, the country's capital, an undeniable charm. A charm that some worry is in peril once the U.S. embargo lifts. Yeah, okay, this, it's so disgusting. They talk about,
yeah, can't we ask Grandpa Cruz and Grandpa Rubio what they think about that little charm?
Yes, how charming. Here's one of the guys who is, let me find this quote. It's amazing. We're still in 1959. That's the beauty of the city. And eventually all this is going to change, says a Cuban-American entrepreneur and has a media group. Real estate developers from the U.S. have been flying to Cuba very quietly, taking notes, taking photos, and putting together their Cuba investment plans. I don't blame them. There are a lot of opportunities here. But, yes, the beauty of it is that it's stuck in 1959.
And I believe there are some people who have been imprisoned since 1959.
And they're vintage.
It's so offensive. I can't even see straight.
Mint in box.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I think that's funny. It's not funny.
That's terrible. That's really bad.
You're a horrible person.
You really are.
You're going to hell.
No, honestly, though, if you think about the attitude that one must have, is that this place is so quaint and so removed from modern times that we will be despoiling it by giving people jobs and opportunity for investments. Now, that's the take that I have, but Corey has a completely different take.
And, you know, like antibiotics and stuff. Ick.
Corey has a completely different take that is beautiful on this as well.
Yeah, well, it kind of hit me when I was reading this article that the left is constantly complaining about the income disparity, you know, that whole 99% versus 1%, which got me thinking about Cuba, because based on other articles I've read, the American companies or any companies that invest in Cuba are going to be paying huge amounts of taxes, and those taxes are all going to be staying with the Cuban elite. They're not going to be hitting the 99%. And Andy had something to add to this, too.
Well, yeah, I was just saying, look, and guys, I don't care if you believe this or not. That's not the point. What you're doing, the first thing, you're going to say two things, and the first one is nothing but a trap. Remember how they tried to trap Rand? You're going to trap them. Just say, when we open up trade, all that money that goes down there is going to go straight to the 1%. It's going to benefit the elites, the Cuban elites, and they're going to suck up all that money through government taxes and through, you know, those who run the industries. And none of it's going to go to the people. I don't care if you believe that or not. It's irrelevant, because now they're in a terrible position. They either have to agree with it and say, oh, yes, it's all going to go to the 1%, and therefore our president is helping benefit the one at the expense of the impoverished 99, and that one is dictator, and he also didn't get any. So our president is helping the one at the expense of the 99, or even more beautifully, what they're really going to say is, no, 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 this job creation, it's going to help everyone in Cuba. This is how you do it. What?
Wait a minute.
But you always said that trickle-down doesn't happen. Trickle-down doesn't work, and now you're saying it does. Now you're saying that job creation and free trade and doing this is going to help them, but you're saying that unleashing the rich here in America, you're saying that doesn't create jobs and that doesn't benefit people in the middle and lower classes. But it does down there magically, but it doesn't here. How can you say that? Why would it do it down there and not here? So either they say, oh, but you've trapped them. Either just say it's all going to go to the 1%, and if they say yep, they're killing Obama. If they say nope, they're killing their entire economic platform.
And the other angle is that it benefits the 1% because Obama did not extract any concessions from Cuba before opening trade. So he didn't require Cuba to make any changes whatsoever in the way that they are.
Right. And
so
then that's
nothing has changed. They're just getting all of our money now.
Right, and that's exactly why the disparity is going to continue to grow down there, because they're not changing anything. Their government isn't changing, their economics are not changing, their system isn't changing, which only makes it easier for the government and the elite connected to continue to hold on to those extra dollars that are coming in.
Well, and, Leslie, you're getting into another point. Once again, he cuts a ludicrously bad deal. It's a place where the people have no money. What good is it trading with people who don't have anything? Because they got some cheap products? Oh, great. Now you're offshoring commerce and jobs.
Right.
All they have is they want our money, and they will cheaply sell high-quality products cheaply to us. What'd you do? You just offshored more money and jobs. So not only is it going to go to the 1% and we've got them sucker punched, no matter which way they go, they lose. But, oh, look at the deal itself. You got a little place that has nothing to offer us but taking away our money and jobs and for cheap profits. It's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win for us.
And also, it also causes the people we can use on them and say, do you want to rebuild their military, modernize their military? Because that's what we're going to do. They still don't like us. That's what's so funny about all this. Castro liked Obama, but he said Obama wasn't the problem. And they still got they still got 500 American people, I believe, in prison as political prisoners. They're not going to change just because money comes over.
We're gonna
modernize their army, and you have to ask the liberals: are you for modernizing Cuba's army? Because that's exactly what we're gonna be doing.
I just like the trap aspect of the question. And Andy, you must be one hell of a Connect Four player. Great. It must be really miserable to play against you in Connect Four.
I've never played it.
Man,
just remember, I was an evil leftist.
Evil leftists don't play Connect Four?
I come from the dark side. I think it. I live it. I breathe it.
Man.
Let's play checkers, though. Don't ever play checkers with him.
There you go. Same general principle. They both use checkers for stuff, so.
Yeah. Red, black.
There you go.
Racist.
He beat me to the mute button.
Absolutely. Should we be moving along to celebrities and our entertainment section? Is that what's up next?
The paternalism continues.
It's the paternalism parade going on.
Yeah. Oh,
it's awesome. Fishy, I think this is probably one that you can talk about the best, since, I mean, it's you got this one.
Okay, well, so our incredible resource on the right, Emily Zanotti, wrote a piece for the American Spectator called Gwyneth Paltrow Takes Snap Challenge, Fails Miserably. I love Emily Zanotti. She's hilarious, and she's got great takes on things, and this is what she did. She went through and looked at the items that Gwyneth Paltrow had picked out: kale and like 7 limes for a week's worth of food. And she's talking about how limited her diet would be and how awful it is for the poor to have to live on this stuff. And of course, she's buying stuff that people don't buy if they want to fill themselves up. So she's failing at that. But it's the whole idea of slumming. It's nice and easy to say as a celebrity, oh, I'm going to reach out and attempt to align myself with poor people and understand what they go through by undertaking this challenge. And my first thought about the whole thing was, I'd much prefer her try to take the Section 8 housing challenge for even a week. That'd be really awesome to see.
No. No, it wouldn't. Those poor people they have enough to worry about.
Oh, well, that's true. She would be dragging them off to spas to steam clean their privates, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's in between the poisoning or whatever it is that she does. I mean, those cleanses can't be good for you.
And I think that's what somebody had said. I don't remember if it was Emily or someone responding, that this is a cleanse, that she bought things to take, a juice cleanse, and wanted to dress it up and look like she was caring about the poor to do it.
That's insane. So instead of an $800 cleanse, it's a, you know, Snap cleanse. That's it. You can get a cleanse on Snap. This is for what? This is Goop free trial edition. Is that what it is? It's
yeah, Goop is her her newsletter, her lifestyle newsletter. Apparently, Gwyneth Paltrow puts out something that helps people to, I guess, cope with the burden of celebrity or who want to peek into the lives of celebrity at least a little bit. And interestingly, when you look at Snap as a program, the first letter stands for what? Anybody?
That would be supplemental, Fishy. Supplemental.
Which means not sole.
Entire budget for food. It's to supplement your food budget. To
That's
allow
why she bought all those limes.
More. Okay.
Because it's zest. Because
margaritas aren't going to lime themselves, damn it.
No. The real question that I have is, why can't she hold all those limes? Why does she just have them on the table like that?
I am the only person that gets that.
I don't get that.
It was a very niche joke that, like, three people are going to laugh at. So, thanks, Fishy, for being one of those three.
Yes. But this is great. This is great. This is what we do, is we put on our airs of concern as Gwyneth Paltrow, and we say that we are going to understand the poor. You saw it when we did the Snap Challenge business last year. There were all sorts of celebrities and politicians who said they were going to do it. Nobody really published their results. It was sort of quietly, you know, went away after that. Probably
right,
because
the publicist came up with an idea, and Gwyneth said, sure, you can tweet this on my behalf. I don't care, because I'm busy with Apple. my child, not the food. Yeah, whatever. But what the left does with this kind of thing, and, you know, it was somebody with Media Matters got in touch with Gwyneth Paltrow's PR person and suggested this as an idea because they want to promote some sort of legislation. You know, there's an idea out there to promote legislation to increase the amount of SNAP available for people. And they're going to do this by deluding the average Gwyneth Paltrow fan or the average entertainment fan into thinking that $29 a week is all you get to feed a family of four. Oh, my gosh. And nobody who does the story about this in Esquire or Entertainment Weekly or any of the magazines who pick this up, none of them are going to say that SNAP is supplemental. So the foundational lie about the story will be propagated all the way through. And then we will have a population in this country who believes the wrong thing and is very emotionally tied to their misbelief.
Well, and something else that hit me when I saw this story last week was that $29 used to buy a whole cart of groceries. And it wasn't that long ago that it paid for a lot more than those items that she was able to take a picture of.
Yeah, so there's been, like, inflation and stuff, right? And that's, like, bad?
Yeah, and so I think that opens up a great opportunity for those people who are willing to listen to talk about things like inflation. Why is that happening? Talk about ethanol and how the fact that burning corn, which is the food that most farmers and ranchers feed to their cattle, drives up the cost of meat. Drives up the cost of gasoline. And what was the other one, Andy, do you remember?
Well, everything. Everything they do.
Tostadas. It drives up the cost of tostadas.
Look,
you looked it back.
Just list off some quickies. Some quick ones really quick here. Okay, everything they do with the EPA, ethanol, and all that dramatically drives up costs of food. Everything they do with, holding back on drilling. Right now is a good time, but it'll come back and gas prices will go back up. It costs more to transport things. Everything they do with jacking up the minimum wage costs more at every place you go to sell them. Everything they do makes everything we get more expensive. And then those who make everything more expensive tell us we have to raise the amount we're putting out and snap. I got a plan. Here's a crazy idea. Because guess what? You're raising the prices for everyone, regardless of whether or not they get SNAP. And then you're giving some people a higher SNAP. Okay, how about not raising the prices on everyone with all your activism? You see, because we conservatives, there isn't one single thing we do that runs up the costs on your products, ever, anywhere, period. End of story. Everything we do keeps costs down.
Well, look what they did to California. The Environmental Protection Agency decided they should save that little smelt fish.
Yeah.
And that's the salad bowl of America. And you want to know why our fruits and vegetables are so high? It's because that land's turned into basically dried up desert.
That's a perfect example, Stefan.
And the thing is then when you say that, say, oh, and by the way, there are examples like that all over the country. What about what they did to coal in West Virginia? What about what they did everywhere? Every single ethanol is the biggest example. Bottom line is this, folks. Nothing we do on the right raises all these prices for you. In fact, we put further competition into the systems that lowers prices. Everything they do raises prices. So why is it those who raise prices then want to raise payouts? What if you don't get those payouts? Then your prices go up. Your prices go up too, and you don't get a dime.
I just want to say that the real bad guy in Justified, which I'm sure finale is this week. It's the end. So I'm glad.
The series finale is tonight.
It's on right now. It is right now.
If you spoil it, I am going to kill you.
Well, no, I'm just saying that the real bad guy is the EPA, because if the EPA didn't, put a cap on all of the coal emissions, then people would have jobs in Appalachia, and Crowder wouldn't have to be peddling drugs and thieving and robbing banks, because there would be actual economy there. Because they have natural resources that they could be mining and utilizing, but they can't because it's terrible and bad to,
And Mags Bennett wouldn't have had to kill herself back in season 2, and it would have remained a good show all the way through all of the seasons because we would have had Mags Bennett in it. Because that was the best season ever.
It's been a pretty good show.
Yeah,
anyway. I got off topic.
Anyway, yeah, aside from that.
Awesome show.
Yes,
really
it is.
Quick here. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I say one last thing?
Go for it.
I'd like to look at Gwyneth and say, hey, you know what? Can we follow? More people need to follow your example. I got an idea. How about if Congress toughs it out by using the same level of health care plans that young people can now afford under Obamacare? How about if they use that same quality? I got another idea. Hey, how about if all these politicians and actors and all the wealthy put their kids in the same schools that they think are good enough for us in the inner cities rather than in these private institutions? Hey, I know. Why don't we rough it together all the time? What do you think?
Or, hey, talk to the congresspeople, talk to the senators and say, you know what? I think that you're an attractive male and I see this on my, x-ray thing in Colorado. I'm a TSA agent. I see that you're an attractive male, and I'm going to exploit the machines and pat you down and, touch your junk because, I'm a TSA agent, and that's what I get paid to do.
No, government employees don't do that because government employees work for the government because they are good people. I don't know why you're slandering them. They go without pay and without comfort and without job security and without benefits, and they suffer some of the worst depredations ever because they work for the federal government because they love and they care.
Leslie.
Just think of it as your yearly physical and go, it'll be fine.
No.
Did I have that wrong?
Yeah, you have that wrong, and there's some serious. Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. I'm gonna put the link in the chat, but this is one of a billion horror stories from the.
There was some arrogant TSA jerk on the radio talking to Michael Berry a while back that I heard, and he was all about how he is saving our lives and making the world. Happy world safe for you. And he gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning and has to get to work. And he works so hard for you. He was absolutely the most obnoxious thing I've ever heard in my life. And he probably touched Michael Berry's junk.
Well, I mean, that's what the story is. I mean, it's hard to believe that this is happening. At least for me, it's just insane that we've allowed this things to get this bad, that we basically have the TSA at this point stands for that sexual assault, and it keeps
on. They can get away with anything because it's for safety.
No, it's not, and that's the thing is that these guys were bragging about the fact that they do this. These agents were actually bragging about the fact that they were gaming the system so they could touch people's junk.
But since this story has been publicized, they've been fired, right?
I believe that at least a few of them have been taken off the job, at the very least. It's insane. It's insane that this was a
union. They have not been fired.
Yeah, what? But if they're bragging about it, how many people are doing it and not bragging about it? That's my question.
Oh. It's scary. It's absolutely scary.
Yeah. Well, and remember with the scanners, you know, the fear was, well, they'll look at the pictures and they'll giggle about the naked scanners. Oh no, they won't do that. They won't do that. Sure they will. I'm certain they have. You know, and I'm sure that if a star ever went through a body scanner, somebody has the naked scan of J-Lo.
Yeah, and it just seems to me, having traveled so much over the last few months, their priorities are so out of line. I'm sure there are some good agents out there, but oh my gosh, I almost got a pat down on my last trip back to Denver because when I went through this big machine that scans everything, I forgot that I had a ponytail holder in my pocket. I know I was a huge, huge threat to national security, but they got all mad at me. They're like, "What's in your pocket?" So I reached in, pulled out this ponytail holder, and the lady wouldn't let it go. She's like, "Well, it looks like you still have something in your pocket." She's poking at my leg because the pocket material for my jeans had gotten bunched up because I had reached in and pulled out this ponytail holder. And I swear, they were about ready to pull me aside and actually give me a pat down because I forgot to empty out my pockets completely.
And this whole insanity of these guys gaming the system brings up one of the stories that we wanted to put up on the refinery. It's been sort of in the queue there, and I'll put it in the chat right now, but it's checklist. There was a checklist that came out about the signs that you might be a terrorist, the different checklist for things that might be a sign of deception, exaggerated yawning, excessive complaints about the screening process. You might be a terrorist if you're excessive in your complaining about the screening process. Corey, you're probably a terrorist, and you didn't even know it because of your complaints about the screening process. In fact, I bet that we are all terrorists because we are complaining about this right here, right now.
Well, you know what's really funny is that I was sitting on the plane and I was really mad about it, so I posted about it on Facebook and I sat there for a second and I was like, do I post this or will I get in trouble?
Yeah. I'm sure that's on the list as well. Excessive throat clearing, widely open staring eyes. That's an actual thing. Widely open staring eyes. wearing improper attire for location. That's an interesting one. I need to figure out what that means. Whistling as the individual approaches the screening process. So if you're nervously whistling as you approach the screening process, because you know you have a bad feeling that you're about to have a bad feeling, that's, you know, you are a terrorist. Gazing down. Exaggerated or repetitive grooming gestures. What?
Excuse me? Are you serious?
Well, if they're going to take my picture, I want my hair to look nice.
Thank you.
Hey, my comb over takes hours. When you only got two hairs and you're covering all this.
Hey, look, if you're going to be with those naked scanners and there's going to be naked pictures of you on computers in those back offices, you want to look your best.
Exactly. Look,
well, for the record, with the comb over, I can't hide anything up there, so I don't understand what their issue is.
The last two, face pale from recent shaving of beard. Okay. Rubbing or wringing of hands. So again, when you're going into a situation where people who have any kind of anxiety at all, basically you're either a terrorist or you have anxiety.
So okay, I'm
no. If you have anxiety, you are a terrorist. I believe that's what we're supposed to believe.
So wait. Let me see if I got this right. I'm in a line with a bunch of strangers. I'm probably late for plane. I'm concerned about the safety of the plane. I don't want to die. And now I have to be in this line, and I have to put my belongings on a conveyor belt and lose custody of them for a while, and they might get stolen near my computer, and it's all of my stuff. And I have to put that on the conveyor belt. And then I have to dump my pockets out. And then I have to take my shoes off. And so I'm having to do all of these things that I don't really do in public, around a bunch of strangers, and then I know that they're going to be, all these people are judging me, and they have the power to throw me in jail if they don't like me and make me miss my plane, and they won't care, they won't be nice. And then they're going to either take naked pictures of me, or they're going to pat me down and get all up in my business with their blue-gloved hands, and I don't let people I know touch me like that, and so why would I allow a stranger to do that in public? And I'm not supposed to be nervous about that?
No, it's the TSA. They're all good guys. I mean, there's never been a TSA agent that has been caught stealing things or inappropriately groping people or, you know, making threats, doing all sorts of other bad. Yeah, no, never happened.
All I know is if they try to pat me down, I don't care what anybody says. I'm farting on them. And that's just the truth. When they go down to grab the junk, they're in trouble. I'm pooping.
Oh, my God. That's terrible. That is absolutely awful. I'm pretty sure that does make you a terrorist. That's chemical warfare.
Using some of those defenses against rape, you know, it's like pee on yourself to make the rapist go away. So when you're in the TSA line, fart.
I'm sure
maybe they should stop building Chipotles in the airport.
I'm sorry I said that, but hey, I could just tell them you pushed the wrong button when you're grabbing. So I pooed on you.
Oh God! Oh my! And like, this isn't the last time we're even going to be talking about Chipotles in this show. Oh man, this is awesome. Fishy, you think we're ready to move into the next stage of this mess?
Tonight's big story, which we made everybody wait for, and go through all this with Stefan's flatulence and all of that, and your awful, awful Cuba joke.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I don't have a filter sometimes.
You think? Oh, gosh. So we know that everybody has been on pins and needles waiting to see whether Hillary was going to announce. And she put together a launch video, and lots of people were tweeting. There was no crowd. There were no there was no audience. There were no reporters. It was, hey, we tweeted a video. Does anybody else, first of all, think that's anticlimactic?
Well, in the first minute and a half of the video, she wasn't even in it.
Not a bit!
Here's the way to announce your candidacy. Hide the candidate.
Right. I went through and had some impressions, and I'll go through them later as we get through the last part of the show. But chiefly every person that she talked about, or every person that was in the video that was ahead of her, had some thing they were getting ready to do, right? They were preparing for the next stage of their life. And what was unsaid was all the horrible things that this economy could have done to put them in that position, or all of the things that they're imperiled by because of the shape of the economy under Obama for all these years. A black couple with a child, a son on the way, and you know, you're thinking, well, the kid escaped that massive abortion rate for black babies. That's good. And then the guy who said, I'm starting a new career. Why are you starting a new career? Is it because you got laid off? Because the economy was bad? Is it because Obamacare? I didn't see anybody on that video either who referenced anything about needing health care. Anybody remember that? Did that show up in there?
No, I don't remember. No.
No. So anyway, she launched, and it has been a whole series of hilarious. JD, you want to set up the video that you did, though, while we are talking about the basics here? All right, so JD's going to go off and get that video ready and let us know what it is. But here's an example of something that happened. Hillary was supposed to go on this van tour, right? So she's got her van that's going to be driving to Iowa, right? Okay, she's driving to Iowa in this van, and the media is praising it for this spontaneous gesture as she heads toward the state that's going to kick off everything, except it was already done. It was done when she ran for Senate in 2000, got in a van, called it Scooby-Doo, and tooled around the state.
And she went on a listening tour, right? Because I thought I remembered Hillary going on a listening tour, and it's like, what, she's doing it again? She didn't hear the first time? So that first listening tour was for her Senate race?
Yes.
And it was a van around the country. It would be like... oh my God! Who is the senator who took over the Ted Kennedy seat and he drove around the state in a truck? Scott who?
Brown.
Scott Brown. I don't know why I want to say Scott White, but that's Scott and White Medical Center. But it was a color. He's a white person, so it was close. But anyway, it would be like Scott Brown coming up and saying, oh, guess what? I'm going to drive around the country in my pickup truck. This is a whole new spontaneous idea I just thought up. And we would all, if it happened to a conservative, everybody, including the conservatives, would say, dude, this is just a rerun. But nobody's saying that about Queen Hillary. Nobody's acknowledging that this is a rerun.
No, the media is completely incurious about the whole thing. And that, of course, brings up something else that was funny.
Because she's their gal, and they have no choice, and so they have to just suck it up and accept it.
Right. So for the first day that they were on the road in this van, nobody in the media posted a picture of it, had any kind of image of it, no description of it. It was as though... And when was the last time the media's ever missed an opportunity to take a picture like that? No one was even curious about it. It was like people were saying, I'm not saying the van doesn't exist. I'm just saying, hey, why isn't the media the least bit curious about the van?
It was a blacked out, unmarked van. Have you seen it? I mean, because she has Secret Service. I mean, it's blacked out. It's just hilarious.
It's crazy. It's ridiculous and funny. And now that the media's actually caught up, they've sort of been posting pictures today of Hillary going to Chipotle, right? Taken from the security camera.
Because there was no media there. Hillary right. didn't have media with her, and there was no media following her. Our guys have media with them, partly because they call the media, but partly because the media follows them, because the media trackers and the leftist trackers are all looking for Rubio and Paul and Cruz to screw up. So they can't go anywhere or do anything without the media. But Hillary was able to drive through Iowa and go into Chipotle with Huma, and nobody even was there to take – nobody even took a picture on their smartphone. Nobody cared.
I think it was in Ohio, Indiana. It was another state.
Yeah, it was Ohio. It was Ohio. Yeah. Right. And Ohio, isn't that an important purple state? Wouldn't you think that she'd be interested in making friends and making a splash and being popular there and being liked and stuff? Nobody even noticed.
Nope.
Which is, I think, why she's popular right now. Hillary is only ever popular when she's invisible, because she's much more popular as an idea than she is as a reality.
And that's true. And when you see how she interacts with media, too, and still gets a pass. Still gets a pass. It's fascinating. JD is going to play the video that he put together for Free Radical Network that juxtaposed her announcement with her interview with Diane Sawyer, the Dead Broke interview. It's a fascinating conversation. People should go to the Free Radical Network YouTube channel and like that, share it everywhere, and make sure you check it out on Facebook and spread that around. The audio is what you'll hear if you're listening to the podcast, but everybody at the show live will be able to see it. I'm ready when you are, JD.
Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion.
It has been reported you've made $5 million making speeches. The president made more than $100 million.
Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times. If you have no reason to remember, but we came to the White House not only debt broke, but in debt. We had no money when we got there, and we struggled to you know, piece together the resources for mortgages, for houses, for Chelsea's education. You know, it was not easy. But the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top.
But do you think Americans are going to understand five times an income in this country for one speech?
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president.
Fantastic. Yeah, so
that really is a good compare and contrast between what she says and what she really is. She is not a woman of the people in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know why they feel like they have to pretend that way. You know, Mitt Romney was a rich man, and he didn't pretend to be a man of the people. He made it clear that he was a rich man who worked with, as part of his Mormon church activities, he worked with people from all walks of life, and he helped businesses, and he actually really for real is more of a man of the people, because he changes his own light bulbs and in his house, and he gets in and he's comfortable with a shovel, and he goes and helps people and does real things that Hillary never does. Hillary hasn't driven herself anywhere in over 20 years.
Right?
She hasn't been behind the wheel of a car. So
she's just
this lady trying to be pretend that they were dead broke. I think she really believes that. I think she is so separated from reality, and she's been so insulated for so long that she kind of believes that everybody lives like her, because everyone she knows does.
Well, and here's the great thing. Here she is casting herself as, you know, a champion of the everyday people. And, you know, of course, she's dead broke because she has mortgages to pay on houses that she bought, like plural houses, like everybody else does, right? Because you have three homes, four homes, right? Everyone? No?
Sure. Yeah, I try to keep it quiet, but yeah.
Right. But that is a great place where in which she's vulnerable. The theme mm-hmm. of Hillary being, and JD made this point today, the theme of Hillary being crowned queen, and there are lots of supporters. If you check JTLOL, Jim Treacher's Twitter, you can see he retweeted a bunch of Hillary supporters saying, yes, Queen Hillary, all this wonderful stuff. But JD made the distinction that a queen is very different in focus from a messiah.
Well, that's
true. It plays very differently. And so casting her as the, she's just like you, she has three homes, or she's just like you, she has an entourage that goes everywhere with her, she's just like you, struggling to pay the bills on multiple houses. You know, that's a good vulnerability that we have for her, and it's something all the candidates can do. They can all focus on that. Every supporter of every other candidate should be on that message too. Doesn't matter what the Republican you support, you can push this message.
Right.
Don't we all pull down 50 grand a speech?
All sure, I do. 50? I get 50 grand.
No. 50?
Yes.
50? Who do you think you're talking about?
Oh, well, I'm a woman. I'm only paid 78% of what you guys make.
No.
I only make 50 is, grand an episode. You guys
this
probably
is, this is Hillary. She pulls in more than that. You just might not have heard about it.
She gets 300, it. 200 or 300K a speech.
Does she really?
Yeah, she does.
But she's boring. Guys, seriously. Now, I feel for them
right now.
What
she says doesn't matter. It's not what she says. It's not who she says it to. She says it to.
You're paying for an audience with the queen. That's it.
It's that, that's not the audience. Paid her $300,000, so when that college needs something, she remembers.
That's it. It's not the content of the speech. It's not the who's there. It's they paid me to come, so I'll keep them in mind when they need something again because they were lucrative for me. It's the same thing with other countries donating to the funds.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's not like Hillary Clinton's actually getting any of this money. It's going to her foundation. There's no problem there.
That helps. She's not getting any houses in Haiti and stuff.
She's not getting any of this money at all. There's no way that it goes to her in any way, shape, or form. There's no funneling of funds.
And you know, it's time for us to have a woman president.
You know, guys, we always hope that, you know, there'll be another smoking gun that'll bring down the big gun on the left. But I got to be honest, in the case of the foundation and money from overseas, it is a problem for her. She is the most compromised leader to come along in ages. I mean, with all this Arab money coming in, it's Chinese, and so it's terrible. She has already been bought and paid for by foreign interests who are not friendly to our country.
It will be difficult for her if Republican candidates and Republican auxiliaries can make hay out of it, can find a way to sell that as an important, small, bite-sized message that makes people feel uncomfortable. They don't even need to really go into the facts, although that's good, but they have to make the oogies come out for Hillary.
Right, just the headlines. And I did like recycling back to the comparison you drew between a queen and a messiah. I think that could be a kind of a powerful message to try to kill some of the enthusiasm among the Obama supporters, because we as a nation are sort of genetically predestined to look towards a messiah. I mean, it's in our DNA that Christianity is basically the foundation of this nation. I mean, it's even if you're not a Christian, you appreciate and you kind of grow up with that mentality of looking for a messiah. Everyone does. It's a human trait. And so when Barack Obama was pitched as the messiah, there was some sort of subtle connection in people that they were predetermined to like that. But as a nation, it's in our DNA to hate royalty.
So does anybody do a good Edward G. Robinson impersonation?
I don't even know who he is.
No one? No. Where's your messiah now? No one?
I thought it would be good to, like, we should be playing the clip from Naked Gun where he says, you know, and it is as ridiculous as we think it is to have a queen. I don't know if you've seen that scene, but he's making fun of the British having a queen.
Well, but that's the thing is that we're Americans.
We are American. Like, I mean, we hate royalty.
We don't do that.
If we can help people who liked the Messiah understand that Hillary is not the Messiah, Hillary is a queen, and you don't like queens, I think there can be some sort of subconscious biological aversion to Hillary on that for a few people. And it's all about the margins. It's all about grabbing 1 or 2% of points of Obama's fan club and pulling them away.
And J.D. made the differentiation this way. The focus for a Messiah is on what he does and means to other people, but the focus of a queen is as a symbol. It's something removed. It's someone privileged. And that distinction is key, and if we keep that in mind as we target Hillary, the entitlement, the rules don't apply to her, all of these things fit into that queen narrative, into that, you know, really your everyday people. There's a visual we'll get to in a few minutes. Before we get to the tweets, the fonts, the symbols, the kind of fun that was had today based on her campaign launch, there's this great piece from IJ Review, and it's a student who was at the college that Hillary was going to today. The story starts titled, "When Hillary Goes to College to See Everyday Iowans, Students Get Locked in Their Classroom." And so first, she goes, and the students are on lockdown from the halls. She's going to see everyday Iowans and talk to them, but the only people that they could find in there were press to be able to go. People couldn't come in that weren't press. Another article also on IJ Review was called "I Am an Everyday Iowan, and Here's How Close I Got to Hillary Clinton."
Is it just me, or did Fishy just freeze?
Yeah, Fishy froze.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I hate it when we have frozen fish. This is terrible.
I hate when I'm driving behind a van that says fish on it. And why do vans have to be labeled that say fish? Yeah, this is called vamping until Fishy comes back.
I thought vans were exclusively named Scooby now. I mean, there was one in 2000 when she ran for Senate. Now there's a van named Scooby. Like, really? And who over there thought that it was a great idea?
Well, because Scooby is so trendy and cool, and we really want to associate Hillary with an old cartoon that was made into a really bad movie with Sarah Michelle Gellar and her husband, and that the van is all about smoking dope and killing and getting rid of ghosts and stuff, right? Who thought that was a way to oppress the kids?
I thought it was just about proving for all time that Scrappy-Doo is a jerk. Spoilers. I'm sorry. Spoilers. Spoilers.
What did you guys think of all the reporters running after her van? Like, see, now for me, whenever I see that many, you know, liberals running, I think looting. And so I was really worried. I was very frightened.
That is terrible. That is absolutely horrible. Oh my God. We actually do have we have a thing for that. There was a great Vine that we'll talk about in a bit, but it's shocking to see the kind of TMZ culture that has developed around Hillary Clinton at this point. Fisher, you back? Oh, never mind. Not back. There's some action going on there. We thought that Fisher might have been back. But you know, it's crazy that, you know, we have people in mining footage from Chipotle, and stalking. You know, it's crazy that this is the way that, and it's all gushing praise. It's not actual journalism. It's just get the latest pics of our top celebrity.
It's clickbait, but it's. There was an article on Washington Free Beacon earlier today about how, you know, the media has completely debased itself and they are completely content free. There was an entire article in the Dallas newspaper about some random woman posting on Facebook that she doesn't think a woman should be president. I mean, this was not anyone, anybody knows. This was not a commentator. It was just some random lady said to her five Facebook friends that she doesn't think a woman should be president. And that post got circulated on Facebook and forwarded a whole bunch of times. And a reporter went and interviewed her. She owns a small business. So a reporter went and ambushed her to get her to say she doesn't believe a woman should be president. And they found one of her customers to disagree with her. And the article was really, really stupid. It was absolutely not worthy of a reporter's time because it wasn't news in any way, shape, or form. But it was the kind of fluff piece that non-reporters used to do and complain about. And you see it anytime you see a TV show about some young up-and-coming reporter. They start out on the little human interest stories. And this was just a human interest story. But it was leftist activism also. Even their content-free news stories are pushing a leftist agenda. They were pushing the agenda that anybody who doesn't believe that it's time for a woman president is wrong, stupid, and to be mocked, and is just like all of those small business owners that don't think gays should get married. It was absolutely a hit piece on conservatives, and it was a promotion piece for Hillary.
Speaking of human interest stories, Fishy Watch 2015 is over. She's back. She's safe. It was just a
welcome
brief
back. What happened?
I have no idea where I broke off. I put the links in the chat, though, for people to read those stories. Internet just died in the whole house, and it was quite frightening. And I was talking to myself going, why isn't anybody picking up with you afterwards?
You had no internet? How did you survive? Did you go to your survival rations? No internet?
You know, I might have had to.
Okay? Are you okay? Oh, my God.
We need to create a safe space. We need to create a safe space.
Well, she shot several people she thought were intruders. They were just kids walking by. But,
right.
You know, okay, hey.
They needed killing.
Protect your house. You're doing it right.
Exactly. So you want me to put up the tweets of the alphabet because
yes,
I have those up.
We have to talk about Hillary logos. Everyone who's seen it has seen its two vertical blue bars with a red arrow pointing right, incidentally, making an H. And so this is now a font called Hillvetica. And JD has some images. He's going to have to, I'm sure, talk to be able to show them to you. But these are great.
Or Leslie could just hit me with the producer clicky thing that puts my picture up in the frame, so I don't have to continue to speak while the picture is, you know, to maintain the picture being the one that's focused on. So I think that we have that set up. Do we have that set up, Leslie?
I think so, if I know what I'm doing, and I probably don't, but I tried.
Did you click on it?
I saw it.
I clicked on it on the computer that's running the show.
Yeah, when he talks, it's on there.
So you're there.
Click on it again, because it looks to me as though it's still...
No, now it's me when I'm talking, and now when I go you, and I'm talking, and it's still, I'm seeing JD.
Oh, okay, well then maybe it's working.
I'm not seeing JD.
Ask the people... We'll just have to ask the people in the chat room if it's working for them. But here's the full set of Hillvetica. It's wonderful. Nice arrows everywhere. You know, my personal favorite is just the, well, actually all of them are awesome, but I like the Q. I think it's just a nice sort of...
Did you guys ever see the old game Chutes and Ladders?
Yes.
Because this really is it's scaring me. It's taking me back. Her font reminds me of Chutes and Ladders.
Trigger warning. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Oh, and here's a lovely one. This is awesome. I hope this is big enough for everybody to see it, but we've got the D.
Yes.
We've got the O.
Wait. These are logos from Democrats. The first one is the D that looks like the lid of a toilet. That's their Democrat logo. You've got the O, the Obama O. And then you add to that the Hillary H, and what do you get?
Don't!
I think we both did that at the same time, so in effect, nobody will actually get to hear the dough that went on, just because of how G-plus audio works. I hate it when that happens.
I heard it.
It was a synchronized... No, I know we hear it, but I think the people in the future won't be able to hear it. The next one, let's look at the next one. The next one is... Oh, this is classic. This one needs to be a possible emoji in the future. I'm voting for this. The meh. I use this word all the time, and I would love to use this particular version because it's so. It's like putting an exclamation point on a word that, you know, never uses an exclamation point. It increases the meh-itude of it by 1,000 because it's got the Hillary H there.
I think that should be attached to Hillary images, Hillary ads, where she has the H. If there's space in front of the H, we just overlay the Emmy on top of it and we spread it as our own kind of anti-meme.
Mm. You know what? You said talking about spreading stuff on things. Well, then there's this one that.
Oh my God!
I did want you to give credit, audible credit, to the people who were creating these.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to not give people credit. So let's go back. We'll run through this real quick. We got Andrew Malcolm, which was a modified tweet of Ref Demo. Then we have Rick Wolf, who's got the full font selection there. We've got C. Stephen Tucker with the dough. We have Hillary to Sam 7 with the tweet of Preparation H. And let's go back. Meh was Red's Outrage, otherwise known as Red Pickle.
That comes from Ash Scow, actually.
It comes from Ash Cat. Okay. So as long as you have that set. And then the last one... I believe the last one I have set is this one. That was the last one that was in my browser window. I might not have gotten all of them, but that's Ha 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 from Killer Bunny Foo Foo. I think there are actually more here that I didn't put over to the thing. I have it here.
Oh, yeah. Ryan is asking, do you have the one that's Hillary and Obama? Ho?
Oh, wow. No, I don't know about that.
He should have it.
I do? I should? Okay, that one.
There it is.
That one. It was the next one. Sorry about that. I had it. It's there.
Oh, and I love the tweet accompanying it. Is it sexist to do a side-by-side comparison of the Hillary H to the Obama O? Is that sexist?
All right, and here's the next one. Oh, this is a different one. I don't know where this.
This is because we've had Obama had his own rainbow.
That's
well,
true.
Well, now we have Hillary in all the colors of the rainbow pantsuits. And Carl Todd Hand tweeted this one: Scotty, come quick! Something has gone horribly wrong with the replicator.
I'm trying to get a close up image of that. It's try and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in and oh, that's terrible.
That's way too many Hillarys.
Yes, it is. But now we understand that the reason why she's so cold and sterile and scary looking, like it's because she's not actually a person. She's a robot, an android. Makes sense. And here's the last one, and this is terrifying. Just.
Now I'm going to have nightmares.
Queen Hillary. And that goes back to, of course, the difference
between that one.
Queen and Messiah. She's dressed up to look like Queen Elizabeth, but that's Hillary's face.
Yes, it is. And there's nothing that we can do about that to ever unsee it. It's been seen. It cannot be unseen. All right, and the last thing, I think the last thing that's on the list of things to share here, this one, we teased it while Fishy was incommunicado, but it is the awesome vine from, hey, why didn't that work?
From Washington Free Beacon.
Yes, from Washington Free Beacon.
Will you be able to have the audio on it?
I won't be able to put the audio on it.
Because bummer. The audio
everyone should imagine it's exactly
what you want it to be.
Yes, everyone
Okay, so one second. Let me see if I can do this. Everybody mute your mic so that's not it's not terrible when this happens. Ready? Is everybody muted their mic? Okay, good.
And what we were looking at is a picture of the press running. This is a picture of the press running after Hillary's van that Washington Free Beacon put out, and then sped it up and put it to Yakety Sax. It is phenomenal. Washington Free Beacon is hilarious, and they have a great Vine game out there.
Well, and didn't this whole thing come about because essentially Hillary was doing all this without talking to the press at all, and so they're so desperate to exchange any words with her. I mean, she announced Sunday, and as far as I know, she hasn't really talked to the press about anything since then. And so they're chasing her down because they just want to ask her a question. And they'll be softball questions. It's not like she has to be afraid of them. She's they're not going to ask her tough questions.
She's like an exclusive author who resurfaces like once a year or something like that. It's incredible.
I mean, are you saying winter is coming?
I think so.
No, that would be yearly. We would be happy with yearly. I'm just saying.
She checks out her shadow, and then she knows what's... Yeah, she's very useful in that way. Outside of that, we're just not getting anything.
Gosh, I hope nobody's getting anything from her.
Oh, bad.
Oh God, it's that part of the show again. We've entered into the.
Well, I wanted to make the point. Someone had tweeted on Twitter about this when all of the media video and everything had come out about them chasing after her. How much it looked like they wanted to be paparazzi.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
Yeah, they're not journalists. They are paparazzi because she's the celebrity. It's the celebrity worship of politicians, and they do the same thing for all politicians. We as a country have promoted our political class to being the aristocracy and the stars and our entertainers, and we have paparazzi and entertainment stories about them, and we do that about even on the ones on the right, and it's not what we should be doing. They're not heroes, they're not gods, they're people, they're politicians. They're not stars. They're not anybody that we should be worshiping in any way, shape, or form. But the media does. And they're so excited about Hillary. It's embarrassing as heck. I'm embarrassed for them. And that they're not embarrassed for themselves is deeply sad.
So, and it's a good opportunity to remember, the media is also an opponent in this election cycle.
Absolutely.
And that putting things like Yakety Sax to a bunch of reporters chasing after a van is helpful in discrediting them, especially when they behave like paparazzi.
Very true. Very true. And JD just put up the closing image. I'm going to make sure that it comes up here. We've joked around a lot, but this is a pretty serious one here. It may be part of the whole joking and making fun of Hillary's horrible logo, but this way to Ambassador Stevens' grave. That's the main reason Hillary needs to lose, guys, because Ambassador Stevens and the other three will not be able to vote either for her or against her. They can't weigh in and give their opinion about which president they'd vote for because they're all dead, and it's down to her.
And those are the stakes, people. Whatever problem you have with another candidate, and we've only got three right now, only three, but there are more to come. Whatever problem you have with a candidate, take a moment and remember that that is what we're up against, not each other.
We're up against $2.1 billion of actual campaign funds and billions more in unearned media and favorable press that she's going to have. She has all of the entertainment, all of education, all of the media, and $2.1 billion against our little guys. And so, yes, for the next, I don't know, year, our guys will duke it out. But while we're choosing amongst our preferred guys, we need to also be attacking her, attacking leftism, attacking progressivism, and promoting conservatism, and promoting our ideals, and promoting our messages, so that the people out there who don't understand, and don't understand that they're actually conservative at heart because they don't believe that an eight-month pregnant woman should have an abortion, well, that's a conservative position. That's a majority position. You don't believe that illegals should be able to get hired before legal employees. You would like to see the black unemployment rate go down. You would like to see the number of people on food stamps and welfare decrease because those people don't need it anymore. You don't want to take their supplements away because you hate them and want them to die in the street. You want to take their supplements away because they don't need it anymore. We want to boost them up into the middle class. Those are conservative positions, and we need to help the public realize and understand that. So it's not just about the personalities. It's about conservative philosophy that we need to get our message out there over the next year, so that when we come down to a GOP candidate versus Hillary, people are able to visualize themselves voting for the GOP candidate. And now I have scared everyone into silence.
Sorry, oh. I was typing. It was my bad.
You were totally distracted. You forgot what you just like not paying attention.
I was being somber and respectful, thinking about how much more important the Benghazi, the death of Ambassador Stevens, and all the other issues are, and agreeing with you in silence that this is the priority.
Okay, but I don't want everybody to leave on a down note. I'm sorry. I brought the crowd down before saying goodbye. We need to be happy.
Exactly. I will say one thing about the press. Not the press, but I don't do this much. I would like to give props to Saturday Night Live this weekend, because they ripped her to pieces. And when the left does something like that, we do need to promote when they do it, because they're sure going to promote it when they do it the other way around. And,
that's true.
What's his name? Hannah coming back and doing Clinton said, I'm glad all them cameras weren't around when I was in office. I'd be in jail.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And it brought a good attack point for us. Do you want all those scandals back? I mean, Saturday Night Live was doing their typical making a joke at their own expense, but it was actually a positive thing because a lot of people really love Bill Clinton. And so they were reminding the public, yeah, we're making fun of Hillary. Remember Bill in those days? Those were great days, weren't they? Bill comes with Hillary and all the good stuff. So it was actually quite promotional for Hillary. But we can attack on the basis of, do you really want all those scandals back? You really want that?
You know, it also helps that it was their funniest skit in quite a few weeks. They haven't had one that well written in a long time. And so that's going to last with people. I'll leave us with some good news. Look, guys. Oh, yeah. We have several candidates. I can think of two for sure, and maybe three or four, who, if they are our candidate, we're going to beat her handily. She can't beat Rubio. She can't. I doubt she can beat Rand Paul. Okay? If those two are on the ticket together, she's absolutely crushed, finished. All right? And I don't know that those two could run. You know, Walker, Fiorina. Fiorina is very popular. We have never had, I mean, I've never seen a field this strong. And on top of that, you have Obama fatigue working in our favor. There's a lot of good here, folks. There's a lot of good. If we if we put forth any kind of a good, you know, any good pairing of some of our top candidates, we're going to beat her. And I think we could actually beat her pretty handily.
Yeah, can I add one thing to that? That you're saying is so awesome. You said it. I love Fiorina being all over TV right now. I think she'd be the perfect vice presidential candidate because they're the one, if you noticed in big campaigns, that do all the attacking against the other opponent going for president. She's a woman, but she is time and tested. Was she fired from HP? Yeah. But did she double HP? Yeah. I mean, she made a great point the other night that somebody said, well, not the other night, this morning Joe went after her hard. Mika and that little weasel, Steve Ratner.
And she responded well.
Oh, yeah, she's responded great. She said, but you lost California. And she goes, I got more Republican votes, Democrat votes, and independent votes than any other Senate candidate that year in the nation. She was trying to say to them, any other state, I would have slaughtered that lady. But that's how left and how huge California is. She's got some political chops. You know, she's not my first or my second. I'd love to see Scott Walker or Rubio. But, you know, whoever we get, everybody just needs to come together and say, hey, we're not going to get a perfect person. They're not going to, you know, you can't get scared of them because of one issue. Because one person can't change anything like that anyway. Nobody has. It's like what you were saying earlier, Corey. I mean, you sit there and said, you know, one person can't go in and all of a sudden abortion's illegal. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's so, yeah. So I think we've got great potential. There's little stuff like every 8 years. I think only one time in the last 70 years that Reagan won back to back, and then the vice president from that one, you know, 12 years of a Republican thing. I think that's happened once on either side within the last 70 years, somewhere in there. So we've got a lot of momentum on our side, and people need to be excited about that.
Well, you know, people worry about somebody like Jeb Bush, and I tell them, guys, Jeb Bush, I give him virtually a 0% chance of getting the nomination. Okay, it's just not strong. We got a great field. It looks good.
Yeah,
I think we do, and I'm excited about the next 18 months because I'm hearing a lot of conversation about focusing on the real opponents and promoting conservatism, and I love the way that our instincts, when things come up, is our instinct is to, yes, attack, but we're making fun of things, and we're keeping it light, and we're keeping it happy, and we're definitely playing more of the happy warrior role, and whether win or lose, it makes us better people, so yay for us. And with that, I think we're going to have to close this week's episode because we've run way over time. And I wanted to thank everybody that I didn't introduce at the beginning of the show. I'm Leslie and Ryan from Conservative Union. And we have Stefan and JD and Felicia from Free Radical Network and Corey and Andy from the Party of Choice. Our regulars, but Stefan joined us this week. He's joined us before, so this is your second episode with us, Stefan, and I appreciate you coming. And we will sign off and say thank you to everybody who participated in the chat room with us. I enjoyed having that. I actually participated in the chat a little bit this week. I usually don't, because, you know, like multitasking is a little much for me. But I tried a little bit. Thank you guys for being patient with me, and we will see you guys next week, and that'll be April 21st. First, and we'll talk about something of interest to us anyway. See ya. Bye.